From Gettysburg to Pittsburgh, Martinsburg to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, every child deserves a quality education. That is the goal of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. Lenny McAllister of the Coalition is here to talk about why more parents are choosing public charter schools for their children. The travel industry has been hard hit by the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report on how it has affected traffic at the Pittsburgh International Airport. And the right to free speech is something most Americans take for granted. But with speech codes and the cancel culture, that right is often in peril. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Lenny McAllister in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania is now the second largest producer of natural gas in the nation, and the state's economy has received a substantial boost from the sharp rise in gas production. So says the Allegheny Institute, which points out state and local governments have benefited from the annual impact fee and permit application fees. The state's Department of Environmental Protection, however, has dramatically increased those fees, but requests for permits have fallen, meaning even with the increase, revenue from these sources will not hit projections. The Institute questions whether this is a backdoor approach to discourage new wells from being drilled, creating the possibility of future job losses in the industry. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has appealed an order issued by the state's Office of Open Records, requiring him to comply with a request by State Representative Frank Ryan of Lebanon County to share data that led to extended economic restrictions placed on that county earlier this year. Ryan said he and his colleagues have been frustrated by the administration's lack of transparency during the pandemic. According to the Center Square, Ryan asked the Office of Open Records to make the data that drove the administration's decisions public. Wolf, however, is fighting to keep that data confidential. The Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is touting legislation it hopes will pass later this month that would reclassify plastics recycling plants as manufacturing facilities rather than as waste facilities. The legislation would then encourage the development of plants that would recycle items such as plastic wrappers and shopping bags back into raw materials that can then be used in the manufacture of new items. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused more parents to investigate education options for their children in grades K through 12. Public charter schools are an increasingly popular option. Lenny McAllister is the new chief executive officer of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. He is here to talk about the importance and the future of such schools. Lenny, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Lenny, before we get into a discussion about issues that are relevant to public charter schools in Pennsylvania, tell us a little bit about the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. You are their new chief executive officer. So what does your organization do?
We're basically the alliance that puts together all the different coalition members, which touches roughly 140 so schools between previous members and current members. And what we do is we look at the diversity that we have between all charter schools across Pennsylvania, both cyber charter and brick and mortar charter. And we try our best each and every day to make sure that we're advocates for the 143,000 plus students that attend those schools, as well as the, like I said, over 140 different schools that have been affiliated with the coalition in recent years, ensuring that the laws give them the best opportunities to innovate, succeed with these kids, that these kids are treated like first-class citizens, not like second-class citizens, and that there's a level of fairness in regards to how education is approached when it comes to funding, when it comes to scrutiny and accountability, but also when it comes to living up to the spirit of the charter law, which was passed in 1997, which was to provide teachers and administrators the additional leeway necessary to innovate and close the education gap that we've been seeing in too many Pennsylvania communities for decades.
A lot of times, Lenny, folks don't understand the difference between various types of charter schools. And your coalition is of public charter schools. How does a public charter school differ from, say, a private charter school? And are cyber charters also public charters?
Cyber charters are public charter schools, and the public charter schools, basically, whether it's cyber charter or brick and mortar, these are schools that use public funds. These are public school students, and students that would go in traditional public schools that choose to go into a public charter school has the same funding following them, except for one very notable exception. The home school district still gets to hang on to roughly one-fourth of the money, while three-fourths of the money follows the kids into that charter school. For example, let's say a kid is attending Executive Education Academy Charter School in Allentown, Pennsylvania. If they're leaving the Allentown School District, if for every $100 that would follow that kid, $25 stays in the Allentown School District, while $75 follows the kid over to Executive Education. Now, this allows the school district to not have to take so much fault on that child exhibiting and, in essence, taking advantage of school choice, but it allows the taxpayer to allow the money to follow the kid in that child's pursuit of the best education possible.
Continuing to work our way through this COVID-19 pandemic, Lenny, of course, a lot of regular, so-called regular public school, brick-and-mortar school students are at home, all are part of the week. Has this pandemic highlighted in a special way here, the need for these public charter schools and more sophisticated online learning that a lot of these schools provide?
People really overlook, Loman, how much innovation has to go into teaching the 21st century school child, and particularly during a pandemic. And I think that the traditional school districts have learned that, unfortunately, the hard way, and there have been some students that have been squeezed in the process. What we have found is that thousands of students have gone over from the traditional public school, even in some of the better school districts in the Commonwealth, and have decided to enroll in cyber charter schools to allow their education to be streamlined and continued forward from March on through. What you find is that in the 21st century, you need educators to have the innovation and the foresight necessary to deal with the modern society. And unfortunately, the public school code is rigid. It's been in place for many decades here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania versus even the charter school law, which has been in place for about 25 years. So what you found over the course of the pandemic in 2020 is that many of our students here in Pennsylvania were trapped in a system that was antiquated and decided to move over to something that was a little bit more pliant and responsive to their needs in these very unprecedented times.
We are talking with Lenny McAllister, who is the new chief executive officer of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. And let's drill down a little further on the budget debate that's taking place, Lenny. Unfortunately, Governor Tom Wolf seems to look at money that goes to charter schools as robbing money from public schools. That's a problem that you've touched upon here. And as we look at this upcoming budget with the state budget being some $5-6 billion upside down, out of balance, do you expect a fight in terms of being able to at least preserve the current funding levels for public charter schools?
I think there's always going to be that tussle there, Loman, because, again, the governor and others view this as an us versus them, and they forget that there are students involved. They're more inclined to listen to teachers' unions and adults that are paid by the system than they are to listen to students whose lives are crafted by the system. And so our fight's going to be, how do you enable people that are willing to listen, and how do you hold people that are unwilling to listen to look at that dynamic and say, we have to ensure that the kids get what they need and stop closing the doors to education equity for these kids. Too often, you look at people such as Governor Wolf that make it seem as though that poor and disadvantaged kids are getting robbed of resources because of money going to public charter schools. When in fact, if you look at who's going to public charter schools, disproportionately, those kids are underserved. Those are kids that are close to or at the poverty line. And those are kids that are disproportionately black or brown. So it's not as though that money is being robbed for poor kids going to rich kids. Money is being taken from districts that are not serving the kids, and it's following the kids. Again, disproportionately poor, disproportionately overlooked and undervalued in our society, to give them the opportunity to be contributors in society. And it's going to be up to us moving forward in November, December, and on through the last 2 years of the Wolf administration to refocus this governor on helping kids where they are and where they want to be, not where he wishes they were and wishes where he would like them to be.
We have heard a lot this year, and sometimes in not so peaceful ways, about systemic racism and various parts of our society that keep people down on a systemic basis here, Lenny. And it's interesting that you would bring up that most of the students who are served by public charter schools are those who are in the less well-served communities, predominantly African-American. So does it not strike you that if we really want to strike at the root of systemic racism and give everybody a fair and equal chance, that having these educational options so that we can at least allow everybody to enter into the workforce with a common base of education, a common base of educational accomplishment, wouldn't that be one way to start leveling the playing field and eliminating racism as a systemic problem in the country?
Well, I mean, you're 100% correct, and it's a fact that's often overlooked. The most consistent long-term initiative that has leveled the playing field and has gone after racism from slavery to today has been education equity. There's a reason why, and I said this in the testimony in front of the Senate Education Committee last year, there's a reason why there was such a harsh penalty for teaching slaves how to read. There was a reason why poor whites in rural parts of the country, including here in western Pennsylvania, were discouraged from being able to pick up a book and being able to learn much past working in the mills, because everybody knew that the way you empower a person in America is give them the opportunity to learn, because then from there, the American dream can be accessible. That's when the self-taught, such as Abraham Lincoln, can become president of the United States. That's when people that were locked out of public libraries and schools, people such as civil rights leaders such as the Reverend Jesse Jackson, can then rise and help change the nation. And these are people, one Republican, one Democrat. But again, through the power of education, equity, and opportunity, these folks had an opportunity to rise and contribute to America. And that's what the focus has to be now, is this long-term initiative has been around, has been leveraged, and we've been successful using it for centuries now. And we can't cut it off now just because a school district is looking for money where the school child is no longer attending school.
Well, the fight will continue to provide educational opportunities to all, regardless of race, color, or zip code, as the case may be in Pennsylvania. Fighting that fight, Lenny McAllister, Chief Executive Officer of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. Lenny, if folks would like to learn more or connect with you, where can they find you on the web?
They can absolutely go to our website, which is www.pacharters.org. That is pacharters.org, where they can learn a lot more about our organization and our coalition, including the $30 million grant that we were just awarded that will start in January of 2021 that will allow us to expand public charter schools by 18 brick-and-mortar schools starting next year.
A big win. Lenny McAllister, CEO of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. Lenny, thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir.
The harsh economic shutdown of last spring has had an especially devastating effect on the travel industry, and air travel has yet to recover. Here to take a look at the impact at the Greater Pittsburgh International Airport are Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, we've been working a lot on the effects of the coronavirus on various aspects of state and local government. And a recent brief that you wrote deals with aviation, air traffic, and the Pittsburgh International Airport. So can you give our listeners an idea of what's the latest data for 2020, how Pittsburgh International has been affected on several indicators that are quite interesting when you look at the beginning of 2020 forward?
We're all aware that when the coronavirus hit back in March of 2020, and daily life was curtailed significantly, including things like vacation plans, travel plans, etc. So knowing that airlines were getting a hefty sum of money from the federal government, we kind of wanted to look at what would be the impact of these reduced travel plans on our local airport, which is Pittsburgh International, and kind of compare it to not just the national average of all airports, but to airports of similar size. You know, most people don't know that Pittsburgh is ranked as the 47th most used airport based on employments. And so we looked at airports of similar size like Cincinnati, Cleveland, Columbus, that kind of thing. And what we found was, as you can expect, it rolled off the table. Nationally, in the first 6 months, air travel was down about 54%. Now, keep in mind that the year started out very well. It started out well in January, year over year. So we look at January 20 versus January 19. It was up about 6%. In 2020 or February 19, it was up 7%. So it was doing well. And then the bottom fell out. And so, you know, when you start looking at March was down about half, about 50%. But April is really, really the low point. For example, in April 2019, 67 million passengers took to the air in origination flights. And I guess need to be clarified on here. Origination means they started their trip at an airport as opposed to changed planes. Anyway, 67 million origination passports and passengers in April 2019, 3 million origination passengers in April 2020. That's a 96% drop in passengers boarding airplanes to start trips in April. Now, it got a little bit better in May. It was down 88.5%. June was down 78%. So it sort of got better. Now, the data for the Bureau of Transportation Statistics only go through June as of the writing here, so that's as far as we can go. But you kind of get a sample, a point as to what's going on in that first 6 months. And if you just want to focus in on the three-month total, just April, May, and June, they were down over 80% passengers nationally.
Yeah, that's pretty stunning, Frank. And what you also did, besides looking at Pittsburgh International itself, was to compare that to how Pittsburgh International performed compared to the U.S. as a whole, mm-hmm. and then all the similar-sized airports. So in that first six-month period, how did Pittsburgh International compare?
In the first 6 months, like I said, all airports were down about 54%. Pittsburgh was down 56%. So it was down a little bit more than the national, which is all airports in the country. The only airport of similar size that did well, and by well, we're going to say relatively speaking, was Fort Myers, Florida. Their six-month passenger count was only down 39%. But the rest of the cities in the sample, Sacramento, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Cleveland, San Antonio, Columbus, Kansas City, they were all down in the 50s. So Pittsburgh had the sixth largest drop of this 10-city sample that we used. So again, right about the middle. So again, it's just those 3 months, that April, May, June, where things are really bad. Like I said before, the national airport rankings were not rankings. Passenger totals down 87% in that period of time for Pitt. They were down 87%. In April, May, of June of 2019, they had 1.2 million passengers. This year, they had 157,000. So definitely a big deal, and not really sure how quickly that's going to recover.
The other indicator that you looked at in the piece besides domestic origination traffic is domestic flights. Mm-hmm. And again, can you give our listeners an idea of six-month periods, again, January through June, how Pittsburgh International fared, and then how it compared to the U.S. and then the similar-sized airports.
Right. Flights, of course, number of planes taking off, again, to begin a trip in an airport. Nationally, the six-month total, it was down 36%. Pittsburgh actually did a little bit better. Pittsburgh International's flight total was down 34%, which was the third best. Again, Fort Myers, Florida led the way. It was only down 21%. Sacramento, California was down 31%. 2%-ish. And so Pitt did pretty well. The rest of the airports were down about 41%. So fewer flights were taking off. You know, they just weren't as full, the ones that did take off. And so you certainly just had this, I hate to say, a freezing of air traffic and air travel, but that's really what happened in those 3 months, especially April And of course, it just kind of came back slowly from there. What we look at going forward is, when do we think that'll return to normal? And I got to be honest with you, it's probably going to be a while. I think, like a lot of folks, everyone's waiting for a vaccine or a cure to take place. At that point in time, they may or may not feel comfortable getting back into an airplane, trying to travel again. A lot of folks that did travel this year probably did it by vehicle, by automobile or so. And so now we look at, what are the implications at Pitt? And so the implication from Pitt is quite simple. The airport authority, which runs Pittsburgh International Airport here, they spent a lot of money subsidizing airlines, specifically international travel. One of the things I guess I forgot to mention, this is all domestic travel. International travel basically came to a grind. And even though it came to that stop, the data lags the domestic data, so we couldn't even look at it if we wanted to. Their data only went through March, didn't have the April, May, June, so we're not really sure, but pretty sure April would be zero. It really ground to a halt. And so we spent a lot of money, we being Pittsburgh International Airport, spent a lot of money to subsidize airlines to travel in and out and to offer nonstop travel to various points of interest around the world, including the country. You're just not going to see that recoup of that investment. It was investments that we'd warned about before. You know, this is not a good idea. They didn't listen to us, and they just had trouble from, you know, British Airways was the most recent. Obviously, no one's flying to England, or it was to London, you know, anytime soon. So that they may or may not see that money back. The other big picture in Pittsburgh International is they wanted to expand the terminal, basically replace the landside terminal. And it's going to cost at least $1 billion. Now, interestingly enough, they came up with this plan back in 1819, came up with it, this is what we're going to do. And, oh, by the way, don't worry, the airlines are going to pay for it. Well, the airlines didn't sign on then, and I can promise you, given what they've gone through recently, they're not going to sign on to it now. So they may end up permanently halting the plans to expand that airport until things start to get better, which I'm not really sure when that's going to happen.
Frank, interesting stuff as always. So we always tell our listeners to always visit our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can follow us on Twitter. And for Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Left-wing speech codes and the cancel culture threaten to rob many Americans of their right to speak their minds freely. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, talks about it on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
This is a critical time for free speech in America. Yet, free expression is in crisis. Social media doxing, cancel culture, campus speech policing in and around free speech zones and safe spaces. You're all familiar with these modern phenomenons. That's why Americans for Prosperity CEO Emily Seidel was inspired to join thousands of leaders and activists, just like those listening now, to sign the Philadelphia Statement in defense of the right of all Americans to speak their minds. Our First Amendment is foundational, as it creates the conditions for all Americans to think, speak, and come together freely. At Americans for Prosperity, we're committed to removing barriers to these freedoms, enabling everyone to participate in public discourse. Suppressing free expression has rarely yielded the results those who imposed those restrictions hoped for. On the contrary, they more often become the victims of their own excesses. What self-appointed speech arbiters, whether in the majority or in the minority, fail to grasp is that they will likely eventually become the targets. The winds inevitably shift, sometimes rapidly. The question is whether civility norms and free speech safeguards will remain in place to protect them, or whether they will become victims of the dangerous precedents they themselves have both established and advanced. Central to the idea of free expression is that the right to express one's thoughts without fear or favor applies to all. The idea of hate speech exceptions to free speech principles is foreign to our free speech ideals. It's impossible to define, and it often is used by those wielding political, economic, or cultural power to silence dissenting voices. That is why we must favor openness, to allow ideas and beliefs the chance to be assessed on their own merits, and we must be willing to trust that bad ideas will be corrected, not through censorship, but through better arguments. In Montana, we joined forces with the ACLU to protect free speech on college campuses by advocating for the Campus Free Speech Bill. We've recently joined the National Coalition Against Censorship to ensure that the rights of protesters are protected during the pandemic. Here in Pennsylvania, we still have time to defend free speech by passing anti-SLAPP legislation. In the House, Representative Diamond of Lebanon has sponsored House Bill 95, and in the Senate, Senator Farnese of Philadelphia has sponsored Senate Bill 95. These are referred to their respective chambers' judiciary committees. Each of these bills would create a process to quickly dismiss SLAPs, or strategic lawsuits against public participation, against constitutionally protected speech through a special motion to dismiss. Americans must be able to assert their free speech rights on issues of public concern. SLAPs penalize protest, and we cannot accept that in our Commonwealth. The Philadelphia statement ends with the following: if we seek to change our country's trajectory, if we desire unity rather than division, if we want a political life that is productive and inspiring, if we aspire to be a society that is pluralistic and free, one in which we can forge our own paths and live according to our own consciences, then we must renounce ideological blacklisting and recommit ourselves to steadfastly defending freedom of speech and passionately promoting robust civil discourse. If you want to sign your name and be added to the growing list of more than 15,000 signatories, visit thephillystatement.org. You can find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Lafayette Hill, along with WLSH-AM in Lansford, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.